Welcome to Yoel's Hangouts podcast. We got a very exciting show for you guys today. I'm here with Jay Bay. You guys have seen him here before. Before we get going, guys, don't forget to like and subscribe to the show if you haven't already. A lot of stuff for us to cover today. It's going to be topics regarding, obviously, if you clicked on this, you probably already saw the title, End Time Prophecy, as well as kind of the truth about Israel, you know, the occupation, quote unquote, of the Palestinians. You're going to hear a perspective from different people that will give you context into why Israel's doing the things that they are doing, as well as kind of the current state of the political system in Israel. So it's going to be a packed show. At the end, we're going to wrap it up with kind of a perspective. If you're a believer, if you believe in the Bible, if you don't, actually, this might be a good show. It'll give a couple good pieces of evidence for you to maybe, you know, explore further about the truth of the Bible and the things that have already been predicted. So yeah, stick around. JB, you want to say anything before I get cracking into it?
No, just hi. Excited for the show. I don't even really know what's going on. So
perfect. This is a perfect situation then. Yeah. Okay, cool. Let's let me share my screen with you guys. The first thing's going to be just a clip of an interview with the former prime minister of Israel. He's gonna Piers Morgan has been doing a really good job as far as doing interviews with different types of people. This is a former prime minister of Israel. Obviously, he's biased. He lives in Israel, so I don't know if that's biased or not to you. I mean, he obviously has a perspective. He likes Israel, so you can take with that what you will. But it's gonna be an interesting thing because he's very specific. What you'll find in a lot of these debates, interviews, whatever it may be,
the former prime minister or Piers is being really specific.
The former prime minister. You'll see. He's very specific as far as what he addresses and how he addresses criticisms of Israel. A lot of people that criticize Israel, it's very vague and very Israel's like this, they're treating people like this, but they don't have the actual kind of like detailed facts. But we'll get into it, and then you can stop it whenever you want and let me know if you want to chime in on anything. Okay.
All right.
Is at their word, and I'm not sure how credible they are, but they're claiming 7,000 Palestinians have died since October 7th, but we don't know how many of those are terrorists and how many are completely innocent civilians, do we?
Well, Israel and the IDF always target the Hamas terrorists. Yes, sometimes the Hamas terrorists use civilians as human shields, but I wouldn't trust Hamas's statements. As we saw just a few days ago, it was Islamic Jihad who shot a rocket at a Gazan hospital. Hamas claimed it was Israel. The whole world echoed that for about 24 hours until it turned out that it's a total lie, and it indeed was Islamic Jihad. So I wouldn't assign too much weight.
So speaking of that, how are they determining death tolls? Like, is there actually a third party, or is it straight from Hamas that like people are getting these numbers from? And then even if Israel claimed that rocket strike on the hospital, first glance, I think anybody would claim it, only because it's like, okay, if me and you are throwing rocks at each other and like a rock hits you, I'm just automatically going to assume like, oh, that was my rock that I hit you with. Like, I'm not going to expect you to like throw it. You're unathletic. And then it hits yourself. Like, I'm not.
Yeah.
Like that, like first, like knee jerk reaction. It's like, oh yeah, that was my rock that hit you.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, analogies are tough because if we get in the real details of things, because, like for example, Israel only targets, threats, whether it's a place that is stores weapons, whether it's tunnels, but they obviously know one that. Again, he said it earlier that the Hamas uses human shields. What does that mean? It means they usually hide headquarters or things that are, valuable to them, whether it's meeting rooms, whether it's where they store the hostages, under highly populated areas, schools, mosques, churches, hospitals. So what that means is that's something to kind of consider, right? But the thing is, we know, like, for example, it recently came out that we know the major hospital in Gaza is essentially the headquarters, like underneath the tunnel system underneath, is essentially the main headquarters of Hamas, is what they came out with. I don't know if you saw that. Again, within the rules of war, they have the absolute right to bomb the living crap out of that hospital. Yeah. They do. I mean, it'd be ugly. I mean, it would get a lot of backlash, of course, and it would just be evil and it would suck. But they have the right because, unfortunately, this is the messiest war ever. They know the game that they're playing. They don't play by the games that most militaries play by. They don't play by the games that the West plays by. So that being said, you have to remember, like, Israel has to play a game that Hamas does not have to play. Like, for example, the amount of rockets that get shot out of Gaza that land inside of Gaza is countless. I think the last number I heard was so far in the war was like 500 rockets have landed within Gaza that were meant to be shot into Israel. And again, they are playing by different rules. Like, the rockets that they send are very primitive rockets. And when I say primitive, they're not targeted. Like, the nice thing about Israel is they have a sophisticated air force. So what they do is they go over, they have a particular area that they want to target. They know where each shot is going to go. They tell people, hey, clear out the northern part of Gaza. You know, this was something that's been told to them for 3 weeks now. They say, we're going to attack Gaza City in the northern part of Gaza, and we're going to target particular and specific targets, right? The thing is, those rules do not apply to Hamas. So Hamas gets away with impunity. They get to shoot rockets that land within their citizens. They get to shoot, they get to, you know, essentially spray and pray and just shoot out. I mean, even today when I was leaving Netanya, I heard a boom from a rocket that landed, and people were like, hey, there's rockets, they're sending them in Tel Aviv, like, hide. And we were like, what's going on? So we went back and we had to go. Like, the thing is, like, there's no, they have to play, they play by certain rules that we don't have to play by. So you can't really analogies are fun because we can get to understand complex things and use them as analogies, but it's not even like a fair, it's not an equal fight. Israel's having to play within these restricted rules, and then Hamas gets to do whatever the hell they want. They get to, you know, send rockets wherever, they get to rape, they get to do all of these evil things, and Israel's looked at, hey, you're bad because you're not, you know, fighting a perfect war, even though within the laws of war, they're able to do what they're doing and more, because unfortunately Hamas, their government has decided to put them in a position where they're vulnerable because of religious reasons. They don't value life, jihad, you know, we can kind of get into it, but yeah, it's just an ugly situation. Did that kind of answer things?
Yeah.
To their words, especially given that they're a group of rapists and murderers. Ooh. So why would you trust them?
No, I completely concur that you don't have to take their figures just because they say these are the figures. But what is clear is a lot of civilians, innocent people, as well as, I presume, some terrorists have been killed so far by the Israeli response with the airstrikes. It's clear also that a major ground invasion will massively increase the number of innocent people who die. And I've asked this question to a lot of guests in the last 3 weeks. I'll ask it to you. What is a proportionate response? Because people are already saying, look, 1,500 people in Israel were killed. It was barbaric. It was evil. It was an act of horrible terrorism. But if 7,000 people or several thousand, whatever the correct number is, already been killed in Palestine, what is the number?
Yeah, I mean, that number is not, no one knows.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to realize, like, this is a terrorist organization.
Yeah.
Like, that's who we're dealing with. So if we're going to take them as credibility, that's like, that's insane. You know, they have no, there's no moral, you know, thing that's guiding them to be truthful about it. So,
and with as much like attention they're getting on social media and in media in general, why wouldn't they inflate those numbers to make it seem like it's worse than what it actually is?
Yeah. And I'm not saying people aren't dying. Of course there are, but you've got to remember, like, this is a thing that, like Palestinians, they usually win the media war because they know that there's a massive population to, compared to the Jews, very small population of around the world that want to sympathize with them, that want to say, hey, you know, you're Arab, I'm Arab, you're Muslim, I'm Muslim, like, we're part of the same struggle. Like, I want these things that are being done to you to be true, to, you know, I guess, like, justify my compassion to you, right?
Yeah.
So it's very complex, because there's like a whole term for it in Israel. We call it Pallywood, which is like Palestinian Hollywood, which, like, they fabricate these certain situations to make things seem as bad as or worse than they actually are. Like, yeah. Even today I saw, like, this guy being like, oh, like, I felt like I was watching, like, an Oscar performance, like, of, like, him in the rubble being like, oh, we just want peace. He had his hands up and, like, oh. And I was like, whoa, this is, like, crazy. But people eating it up. And look, you know.
I bet it brought you back to when you used to live in L.A.
You know what I'm saying? Low-key. Like, I felt like I was literally, like, in West Hollywood, like, yeah, seeing someone do a skit. Like, it was just – it's just interesting. And look, yeah, you know, it's a messy situation. But we'll move on from that. We'll go to my next video. This video right now that I'm going to show you is a guy that's Egyptian. He's a pastor, and he talks about how in his Egyptian culture, certain things – make sense in the Middle East that Westerners will not really understand. I posted this video on my Instagram. I don't know if you saw it, JB, but you'll see it if not. But it's going to give a little bit of context for people that don't understand why there isn't, like, people coming to the table right now and being like, kumbaya, let's just, you know, figure it out. Let's just, you know, let's have a resolution that, you know, just makes everybody feel good. Like, why that might not be a reality right now. So I'll play the video. Hopefully it plays. Oh, hang on. I have to select it.
It's okay, you're new at this.
Yeah, dang, bro. I need to connect my other screen. That's the issue. There we go.
They understand is retaliatory action or preemptive action.
Okay.
Men do not respond to weakness. They do not respond to the mindset that says, well, let's just try to get along and let's have a conversation. The only language that they understand is retaliatory action or preemptive action. It's the way it is. Matter of fact, it's embedded within our very culture. Can I give you an example of this?
Yeah.
We went to Israel. I took my wife to Israel for the first time the year that we got married. She started identifying certain things that she wanted to buy or take home. I told her, I said, okay, babe, let me do the negotiating. So, and I started my first talking in English. And, you know, when you hear me speak English, you don't hear any other accent. And then pretty soon after I started hearing what they were saying to one another about how much money they had and what they were willing to spend, and then I converted and I started speaking in Arabic, in which they got super angry. They started yelling at me. They were being very aggressive, told me every Arabic curse word in the world. Because the moment they hear me start speaking in Arabic, they know that they think that I'm born and raised in Egypt, because the way I speak Arabic, they think that's what's going on. So then my wife expects me to do something that I don't blame her for expecting, right? She expects me to run away with my head between my legs. She expects me to hear these guys cursing at me and then leave and go find another place to go do some negotiating. And what she witnesses made her strikingly uncomfortable, to the point, bro, where she had to walk away in the middle of the conversation because she was so bothered by what she saw. Now, what bothered her? The moment they started screaming at me and yelling at me and, you know, throwing out a bunch of insults, I stopped right in my tracks and I yelled and screamed at them in Arabic, the same way they were yelling and screaming at me, except louder and more aggressively. And I didn't curse. Obviously, they know that my mouth is a Christian mouth, not a Muslim mouth. They had Muslim mouths. But my whole point behind it is they respected that. When we got to the end of that negotiation, we sat down and we had a cup of tea together, right? And had a little bit of a conversation, and then we moved on. And so it got to the point where any place we went to in Israel, my wife literally turned away as though she didn't know me when it was time to negotiate. Not because she was embarrassed by me, but because she could not take the stress because of her personality and her upbringing and her background, the stress and the pressure of the loud argumentation that is oftentimes involved. Yeah. So think about it like this. If it takes that kind of effort to buy something like a cup or a mug or bread or whatever it is you might want to talk about in the Middle East, do you think that these Arabs are going to respond well to an American or Westernized mentality that says, let's stand and protest on their behalf and let's try to embrace them and hug them and make peace? It doesn't work that way. You come and you do what you did to Israel, you better darn well expect that Israel is going to respond in the same Middle Eastern language that they're familiar with. And they are going to slap the living you know what out of them, right? Because that's what has to come back. And anybody who's Westernized that doesn't understand that isn't going to ever understand it, because they don't know our language. They don't know our culture. They don't know our background. Now, what that creates for us is a massive war footing, because that's where we're headed towards.
Yeah. What did you take from that?
It makes sense. I mean, we're men. We like to fight. And You know, imagine if I like, I mean, especially with the homies, if like somebody's trying to punk one of the homies and the homie doesn't do anything, everybody's like, oh man, you're soft. Like, you know,
yeah,
you gotta give back what you just took. So,
I mean, in the West, I think it's different, right? Like you can kind of, like if things are on, things are on. You know what I'm saying? Like, for example, like the U.S. is taking L's in the sense of like there's already military action going against the U.S., like with Iraq being attacked. And I think there's been like 20 strikes by, I think, Iraq and the proxies of Iran, right? And yeah, we've only retaliated like just recently. Like, that's the time let's run it. Let's make it equal or more aggressive fights. But in the beginning stages, you can be like, okay, let's go to the let's not let this thing escalate. This war's already started, so there's no you can't be the whole peacekeeper. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Once that like line, like where you cross over to violence, once you cross that line, it's like all bets are off at this point. You're like in a street fight.
It's on.
Yeah.
Especially if you get that many licks, you know what I'm saying? Like they got licks, like they came in and did damage, like, and it was just dark, like, let's keep it honest. So after doing that, you can't just walk away and be like, okay, ceasefire. Like, everyone wants a ceasefire. The whole world wants a ceasefire right now. Yeah. It's not going to happen for many reasons. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
But the main reason is we have to hold the people that did what they did accountable as a country. So, you know, it is what it is. So now we're going to transition into a very fun part, the part that I like, which is end time prophecy, baby.
Perfect, because I only have 15 minutes.
Okay, perfect. Let's run it before you have to go. I won't say anything. Let's see. Let's get it. Let's run it up.
End times prophecy.
Do it as an umbrella, a gigantic umbrella. And underneath the umbrella, there are dispensations or events or times. We are now 2,000 years into what Jesus said and the apostles said in the last days. But he gave.
I listen to all my stuff like 1.5 and 2 speed. Like, so I hope no one's speeding it up, or else it's going to sound really like digitally.
Specific warnings as to how to identify the last days. The number one indicator is literally found in the book of Isaiah, chapter 66, Daniel, chapter 9, and in Matthew 23:24, when the Bible says one of the real kickoffs of the last days is the rebirth, Charlie, rebirth, underline that, the rebirth of the nation Israel. The book of Ezekiel says that God would draw his people.
So that's big. People sleep on that. Because you got to remember, the birth of Israel being a nation was not like it. You got to think about these prophecies that are put in the Bible. Like, that seemed like there's no way that's going to be in our lifetime, but it happened.
Yep. You
know, Israel's a country. It inhabits the descendants of, you know, Abraham, Jacob, and Isaac. So, you know, it's happening right now.
And there's talks about the third temple.
There is. Ooh, that, okay, you're hip. Yeah. We might do that. We might get into that on a different episode.
Yeah.
Of the world. Isaiah 43, and that he would assemble them back into their own land in the last days. He would cause their land to become farmed and prosperous and fruitful. But watch this. They would come back not believing in God, which is amazing to think, but also this, that when he did that, Charlie, that he would begin to assemble at the same time, there'd be nations surrounding Israel that would be against Israel's existence and that they would seek to destroy it from the face of the earth. So it's a remarkable thing that we are now talking about Israel.
That's happening now for people that, you know, don't know that. I live in Israel too, so, and just know history.
May 14th, 1948, a nation was born for the second time in one day. Isaiah 66 said, can a nation be born in one day? Will Zion be brought forth with her children in one day? And the answer is yes. So that's where we're at. That's Israel in the short term. Of course, Israel has a history that is unlike any other nation on earth.
That was super helpful, Jack. Thank you. And then I want to go through also what happens once those birth pains occur. But let me ask you a question we received from our audience. Some people say, Charlie, my pastor says that what happened in 1948 is not actually Israel. Israel is just the Jewish people, not the creation of a government that happens to be in the Middle East. I'm sure you've received this question before, Jack. How would you respond to that?
Yeah, number one, the pastor's critique is exactly correct, but the pastor needs to read more of his Bible.
Ooh.
It's kind of what I said a moment ago, that the government of Israel has been brought together by the will of God, not by the opinion of men or the United Nations or by even Harry Truman, Charlie, at the time. The thing is this, God said, I'm going to cause the nation to come into existence a second time. So that removes our opinions. The question is this, is Israel a sovereign country? Well, the answer is yes, but people get confused with...
You know what's funny? People always like to say, you know, oh, well, you know, Israel was brought together by Zionist atheist entity. Therefore, you know, it being brought together isn't even valid. I'm like, I mean... you got to remember, like, it doesn't matter. Like, it is here. So
yeah.
Whether like you, like, imperfect people have always been the catalyst to do God's will. Like, there's never like, what's like the crystal perfect scenario of Israel being created? Like, are you looking for this like savior of a guy, like, never sinned rabbi that just says, okay, we're going to start the cut? Like, the reality is, like, all throughout the Bible, if you follow the Bible, is like imperfect people doing God's will, and just because God controls everything. So, you know, he makes things happen. He uses sinners. He uses people that are religious, not religious. So, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
Just with the fact that, well, they don't believe in God. But Charlie, the pastor needs to understand, again, he said that they would come back into their land in unbelief. It's part of the amazing miracle. Yes, Israel's a country. Yes, we do understand that they do not believe in Yeshua, Jesus as Messiah. But even that was prophesied in Scripture. Charlie, they're gearing up. Imagine it this way. The pieces are being set in place like a play just before Les Miserables begins. You can see through the curtain. Everything's getting set up for what? For the big debut. When God specifically turns to Israel for the final time based upon his eternal covenant with Abraham, with Israel. And that is called the 7-year tribulation period. A lot of people don't understand. For 7 years, based on Daniel chapter 9, God will deal specifically, not with the church, but exclusively with Israel. Those 7 years is all about God and Israel and a Christ-rejecting world. The church has no business in that arena. Again, Daniel chapter 9. So pastors need to realize, we do understand that the Israeli government, to themselves, is living without God. They may act like they know God. They may go through traditions, but they're not trusting God. They're not calling for prayer. But that is exactly what the Bible warned about and taught us about. The birth of the nation would be very, very secular at the beginning. Dry bones, Ezekiel said. They would come together with no spirit in them. But just before the end, Charlie, in Ezekiel 36 and 37, God said, then I will breathe my spirit of life into them. Then they're going to believe in me.
That's crazy, actually, because that's facts. Like, it's very, like, culturally. I mean, obviously, being Jewish is the line of of Abraham.
Uh-huh.
But the actual God, you know, because even in the Bible, you know, they were still, it was still the nation of Israel, right? Whether they, you know, when they left Egypt and went to their the promised land, they were still Israel, right?
Yeah.
Moses led Israel. So whether they, you know, worshiped idols, went back to Yahweh, went like flip-flop, went to, you know, they were still at that whole time Israel, right? So this is the season I've noticed. I mean, this is the most atheist country, but is the most Jewish at the same time, which is kind of weird because everything in Israel, like, that I see is like God is like, it's cool, but the main thing is like, how religious are you?
Yeah,
that you can even be super religious and not believe in God, which is kind of a weird concept. As Christians, we kind of assume both are connected. Having a like, the more religious you are, the more your connection with Jesus is.
Yeah,
but here I would say even the religious Jews, like, God is kind of like, you know, you can be an atheist and be a religious Jew. Like, you can. And I have heard of a couple of people being that. It mainly is the rituals, you know.
Yep.
And, you know, it is what it is. You know, I believe people can do what they want. But it's just very interesting that it's in the Bible and was prophesied. And I think that the lack of knowledge that people have, even in Israel, about Jesus will actually prove to what will be the future, which is, I think people will come to Jesus because, one, people have no idea and don't even understand Jesus. And it's just interesting because I think I was talking to my dad. I was like, you know what's funny? I can see like a big revival in Israel coming because, and this was before the war, everything, because we're in a situation where people are, you know, the atheists, the Christians, a lot of them, they're very into like occult stuff and pagan stuff. Like, they're doing like crystals, yoga, like a lot of like Hinduism, like they always gravitate toward that. So they're seekers. Like, I would say Israelis are definitely seekers.
Yeah.
And a lot of seekers start out as just seekers and then they always end up, you know, come to the truth. And I think collectively there's going to be a wave of that. I feel it.
Yeah.
In the next, I don't know how many years, but I think Israel is for sure primed. But I know you got to go. We won't kind of get into it too deep. I'm hoping we can do this again, maybe, you know, Monday or whenever you're free. If you're watching so far, if you like what you see, if you like J-Bay, if you don't like J-Bay, say it in the comments. You know, he'll take all that smoke. Any last words about what we covered today?
No, find God. That's it.
Jesus is king.
Jesus is king.
All right, guys. We're out. Peace.